Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Cruella, A Quiet Place Part 2, and the TV series Panic, Disney Plus's Launchpad, and The Fugitive as part of the Roku Channel's re-release of the Quibi content. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Prince's Voyage. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news that hit this week in terms of movies, and I guess television and series in general, is Amazon has struck a deal to buy MGM, including its library, for $8.4 billion. Now, this still has to go through some antitrust investigations in the U.S. and the U.K. The biggest reason that people want MGM is because of its library. It has a huge library, which includes the Rocky films and the RoboCop films and the Pink Panther films and Silence of the Lambs. And most importantly, the James Bond franchise. Not just the previous James Bond films that have all been released, but also the upcoming films and the right to partner with Eon Productions, which has creative control of the franchise. Now, this isn't going to affect No Time to Die, which is going to be coming out later this fall, but it impacts the library. So it has the rights now to all of the James Bond movies. So I imagine when this is all taken care of and when the sale goes through, all that stuff's going to start showing up on Amazon Prime. The other thing that's interesting about it, and while I don't think it's going to impact the theatrical release of No Time to Die, because this may not even be a done deal by the time that comes out, but if you remember during the pandemic, a whole bunch of streaming services were trying to buy the rights to No Time to Die, including Amazon and Netflix, and they weren't able to strike a deal with that, but if Amazon ends up buying MGM, it could do whatever it wants to. Now, of course, it's not going to be impacted by the pandemic because hopefully we're coming out of that and the theatrical shutdowns aren't going to happen again, especially with the number of people being vaccinated. Even if there are surges, there's not the public health problem for the people vaccinated. But it needed to go to a service that was going to put all of the stuff online, just as Disney can now put all of the Fox properties online. Amazon can now put all of the MGM properties online. And honestly, I'm all for this. Because you got these giant media conglomerates, but you already had them already. I mean, you have Fox going into Disney. Warner Brothers is still there, although there's talks that Disney wants to buy Warner Brothers. I don't know if that's going to be able to end up happening, but that's down the road. But it'd be nice for MGM to have a place to be, so that a company that is solvent can own it and it didn't have to depend on just one franchise to continue, which is kind of what was happening with James Bond. Everyone either wanted the library or the James Bond films, but all those together, there weren't enough franchises to have such a price tag, but it makes sense for Amazon. The next piece of news is sort of like just a warning as you listen to the box office coming in this weekend, because there's been an overwhelming number of stories that are basically, box office is back, baby. Huge summer blockbusters are back. We are back with theatrical presentations. And look, you are in for an emotional roller coaster this weekend if you are buying into that. You have to realize A Quiet Place, which is one of the two big releases this week, it's the first 100% theatrical release for what would be considered a blockbuster-level film since Tenet came out on Labor Day weekend last year. There are still plenty of limited theatrical capacity restrictions going on, and there's limited theaters. While they're open around the country, there are still limitations. Plus, there's a big theatrical hesitancy, and I use that term. You know how they have vaccine hesitancy? I think there's a theatrical hesitancy that a lot of people have, and it's still out there. And it makes sense if you're unsure of wanting to go into a crowded room with people you don't know who may or may not be masked for a couple hours, because if you aren't vaccinated or protected in some way, it can be troublesome or at least worrisome. Like I said, I've been back to the theater for a couple things. I don't know if I'd be comfortable, even though I've been vaccinated, in a room just packed shoulder to shoulder, but they don't have that. But so there's still a lot of people who are a bit hesitant to go back to the theaters, and I think we're going to slowly get that back. But we're not going to see the return to theaters until well closer to Christmas or maybe even into 2022, at least to the levels of the pre-pandemic time. Because we also have to remember that there's a 45-day window before A Quiet Place streams on Paramount Plus. So if you just want to wait 45 days, you can see it for free if you've already got that service. It's the same thing with Cruella. You know, we're not going to know how well it does on Disney Plus premiere unless Disney decides to share those numbers. And we may never know. My general caution remains the same. Wait until Black Widow comes out this summer and see what happens when Disney really gets a chance to release a four-quadrant tentpole release of a known franchise with bona fide movie stars, and to see how well that splits between actual theatrical distribution and at-home premium pricing. That's when we're going to have a real sense. So we still have yet to get to the summer before we have a real sense of how these pandemic restrictions are going to permanently affect movies in the future. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to hit is The Tomorrow War, which is going to be on Prime on July 2nd.
We are fighting a war 30 years in the future.
Is this a joke?
Our enemy is not human. We need you to fight.
You got drafted.
I will be back.
In 11 months' time, all human beings in the future will be wiped from the face of the earth.
I was trying to save my daughter. If I gotta save the world to save her, then I'm gonna do it.
While Amazon has had movies like Coming to America and the Borat sequel, they have yet to really release the huge tentpole release that you would get with something like The Tomorrow War. The Tomorrow War feels like a movie that would go to the theaters. Now, I don't know the full story of this, if it ever did a pivot or something like that, but I mean, this is different than like My Spy, which was just kind of like a family comedy that went to Amazon. This is Amazon seeing if they can do a blockbuster type movie on their service and how well that works. And so far, the trailer looks interesting. It's not completely dragging me in to see it, but I am curious about it. And I just hope that they have enough story to propel it, and that it's not, I just hope it doesn't like run out of steam the way something like Battle Los Angeles did. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Eternals, which comes to theaters on November 5th.
We have watched. Unguided. We have helped them progress. And seen them accomplish wonders. Throughout the years, we have never interfered. Until
again, we got to wait to see what happens with Black Widow to find out how Disney releases its further Marvel movies. If Black Widow makes a lot of money with the Premium Plus service, I guarantee you they're going to do that for the movies they have this fall, including The Eternals. I still have no idea what this is about. It's a neat trailer and it looks cool, but I don't follow the Marvel comics, so I don't know what we're getting into. And this is where the rubber's going to meet the road for Phase 4 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is if people can pick up and understand and work with stuff that is not general knowledge. You know, you're no longer dealing with the Hulk and Iron Man and Spider-Man and the X-Men. You're dealing with characters a lot of us have never heard of. I have faith that Marvel will do it, but these movies in the fall are going to be the ones that tests that ground. So we'll see. It might be a huge success. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Cruella and Panic. Thank you. to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Cruella. Emma Stone stars as a misfit petty criminal trying to find a way into the mod fashion world of London in the late 1960s.
From the very beginning, I realized I saw the world differently than everyone else. That didn't sit well with some people. But I wasn't for everyone. I guess they were always scared that I'd be a psycho. I am woman. Hear me roar.
I say 1960s. The press release says the 70s, but when you listen to some of the dialogue in this movie and you look at some of the contemporary clues, pretty sure this takes place back in the 1960s. That's especially when the mod scene was getting ground in London. Disney has been doing this since the 90s, where they've made live-action versions of their cartoons. And this goes back to the 101 Dalmatians movie they made with Glenn Close. Then Disney kind of had a reboot of this concept in around 2010 or so, because that's when they did like a live action Cinderella, and they did a live action Beauty and the Beast, and well, live action Lion King. It was photorealistic CGI, but it looks live action. Live action Aladdin. And it's also kind of jumping along the sidelines with the Maleficent movie, which are taking these characters, these well-known villains, the Disney villains, and giving them a backstory and putting them as the unlikely protagonist. Now, I thought that worked really, really well with Maleficent, because she basically did it as saying, hey, the winners tell the story, and this is my side of the story, and Sleeping Beauty's dad wasn't as good as they make him out to be in that original movie you watched. And so they're trying to do the same thing with Cruella de Vil. And if you look at this as just the origin of a Disney character, of this bad, mean at times, crazy woman who has had a rough and tumble childhood, but is just there to protect herself, it works. And Emma Stone is fantastic in it. Emma Thompson, by the way, who plays the evil fashion designer who runs the show, in sort of this Devil Wears Prada kind of story where Cruella is trying to become a fashionista, but she's working for an overbearing boss. Emma Thompson does a great job in that role. The other thing, this movie is beautiful to look at. It has gorgeous production design. It has some incredible effects. It has amazing costuming. I mean, this is a lavish production. And like I said, the acting's really good as well. You know, I mean, particularly by Emma Stone and Emma Thompson, they sort of hold the show together. And I like what she does with the character. I like how they give an idea, because you always want to wonder where, you know, an innocent little child, how that innocent little child gets corrupted to become the villain that we know. I mean, that's essentially going to Star Wars, what the appeal was of, at least the attempt of the prequels, was to show how Darth Vader became this evil Darth Vader. When it comes to Cruella, I think Emma Stone does a great job with it. I think the movie is put together very, very well. When I say I'm not sure who this movie's for, because I saw somebody on Twitter complaining that I hear a lot of male critics saying they don't know who this movie's for. No, I know who this movie seems to be for. It seems to be for young girls who are interested in fashion. But here's the thing. You can't make a $200 million movie out of that. And that's my one big concern on this movie is, at the end of the day, it's a movie about a woman trying to work her way up in the nail-biting world of fashion, which that's going to leave like 60% of the audience at home. Because there's a lot of people who are like, well, I don't want to see a movie about fashion, even as cool as this movie is. So I think that this is a kind of a hard sell. Add to the fact that it's a PG-13 movie, and I didn't see anything overly violent or disturbing that happens, but it gets a PG-13 rating, which will cut out the younger audience, because there's a lot of parents who'll choose not to show that. And so I think that that's something to caution people on if this does not come back with massive box office, because it's not a movie for everybody. You have to have an interest in fashion, or at least not be turned off by fashion. You have to be into that sort of cattiness of two women fighting in the workplace. Don't think too much about it, because at some point you get to the end of this film and you think, what happens between now, where I like this character, And in so many years, she turns into a villain who wants to slaughter puppies. I mean, I know that there's a camp appeal to Cruella de Vil, but in terms of the Disney villain, she's one of the most villainous. I mean, at least, you know, somebody like, you know, Maleficent is, you know, she's about control of the region and the world and the woods and, you know, battling kingdoms, basically. Snow White's, you know, that woman's just trying to keep her own section of the inheritance, so to speak. Cruella de Vil just wants to make a coat out of puppies. And I don't know how you ever get to that situation and still make that an appealing character. But, you know, we'll see if enough people can divorce themselves from that concept. Because overall, I mean, Cruella is a fantastically beautiful piece and very interesting as well. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Panic. This series on Amazon Prime follows a group of high school graduates who play a dangerous game for a chance to win a pot of money that will allow them to escape the town.
There was a game. It's called Panic.
This year, the winner's gonna take home $50,000.
Each year, there are new players. New challenges.
You don't need Panic to go to college.
Yeah, I do.
You could actually win.
Just be careful.
Last year, this game put two of our kids in the ground, and someone's gonna pay.
Guys?
Starting.
This is another teen-centric series. Now, it doesn't have a magical element to it. I was talking about a lot of them that I've been seeing on Netflix show up lately. This one's certainly directed at teens, and it's based on a best-selling book. I'm not the target market for this. I'm well beyond my teens. Well, the other thing with this series is it just, everything's a cliche in this. You've got this small town and it's full of cliches because the girl is stuck there with the white trash mother who steals her money and she feels she can never escape. And everybody's stuck and all she needs is this $50,000 prize. They have this elaborate game set up every year that they have this pot of money kids can win, but they do these dangerous challenges, kind of like Fear Factor, only where you could really die. And apparently in the series, the previous year, a couple kids did die because they were like walking into traffic blindfolded. And those are the kind of things, I mean, incredibly dangerous stuff to the point that they actually have a disclaimer before the series when you watch it. But the problem is this contest that the kids do is so elaborate and has so many people involved. And it's kind of adorable to watch this show and to think anybody can keep any of that under wraps. Have you ever tried to plan a surprise birthday party? I mean, these are teenagers, and you've got an entire class of teenagers, and nobody's blabbing. I'm sorry, that's impossible. They have, like, a sheriff's office is trying to find out where these events are taking place, and they're setting off fireworks and cheering, and they got cars, and they got beer, and they've taken over entire areas of farmland, and somehow they're not able to track this down. It's absurd at a level that it just doesn't hold together. It's a house of cards, and if you think too much about it, it falls apart. Now, if you go in with blinders and you just say, okay, I'm going to not question anything, maybe the series works, but the characters are very cardboard cutout. I'm not a big fan of this, so I'm going to have to say Panic kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about A Quiet Place Part 2 and the Launchpad. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the other big film for the weekend, and that is A Quiet Place Part 2. John Krasinski directs this sequel in which a mother and her three children try to avoid creatures that hunt by sound while trying to find other survivors after a cataclysm.
I don't know why you came all the way up here.
There's nothing left.
You don't know, do you?
I do.
The people that are left are not the kind of people worth saving.
This was one of the first movie casualties of the coronavirus. It was set to come out like in March or April of last year. I mean, it was like they shut down theaters like a couple weeks before this would have come out. Very similar. Candyman was another one. Mulan was another one of these early casualties that got dropped off the slate of releases. Well, they're finally releasing it now, like 14 months after they originally wanted to. I'm glad that they're bringing it to theaters. I'm curious to see how well the exclusive theatrical window is going to be, if it makes money or if the wheels aren't greased in the box office quite yet. I mean, eventually we're going to be back to movies making tons of money at the box office, but we may not be there yet. So this is as much a gamble for Paramount as anything else, because Paramount hasn't released anything in the theaters at all. I think the last major release was Sonic the Hedgehog, and that was in February of last year. They had the SpongeBob SquarePants movie, Sponge on the Run, but that dropped on Paramount Plus, the opening when they rebranded Paramount Plus. A Quiet Place Part 2 is Paramount taking a gamble. It's taking the gamble that Warner Brothers did with Tenet last Labor Day. Now, it's a better movie, for sure, than Tenet. I mean, this is a good movie. John Krasinski proves that he was not a one-hit wonder. He did a lot from the same well. He does sort of tread similar ground. The whole gist of the story is these people can't make noise, and you've got these monsters coming after them. Now, at the end of the first movie, they basically figure out a way to disable the monsters enough that they can then kill them. And, I mean, it literally picks up right after the last movie, like from the last frame of the first movie. But it does sort of retreat a bit and make the mom and her kids terrified of the monsters again without going on the offensive that they had been before, which I felt that was a little bit weak of doing it, because I'm like, oh, all of the, you know, effort that they put in the first movie, a lot of it deflates and gets back to the, oh God, we're terrified, we got to walk on ashes all the time till we don't attract these creatures. Whereas I think that could have been handled better, but we still fall into that, you know, the creature stalking and then you have to be quiet. And those are effectively done. They're very expertly edited and put together, and the pacing is great. The big difference between there's two big things. One of them is they flash back to the beginning of when this happened. You know, we go back to, we basically Bird Box it. If you remember the movie Bird Box on Netflix, where it flashes back to when Sandra Bullock and Sarah Paulson, the first attack happened from whatever this thing was that was causing the stuff in Bird Box. And we see that as well. The money they spent on this movie, the extra money that they spent, because the first one was done on the cheap, this one they threw more money at because it made so many bucks at the box office. You could have this big opening sequence of when the attacks first started. The other big difference is it's about them trying to find people as opposed to cowering and hiding, which is kind of what the first movie was. The first movie was people just trying to stay safe and going out only when they needed to. And this one, they're venturing out to find other people, and we are questioning whether people are worth connecting with. And they meet different types of people, some good and some bad. And it's exactly what you would expect would happen. It's not as punishingly depressing as some movies where it's like everybody that you would meet out there is horrible. But there's always going to be horrible people out in the wilderness and out in the world. You will never get rid of bad people. But they do open up to other communities and different people and options for them. I what I wanted to see from the end of the first movie is I really wanted to see them go on the offensive against these creatures. And we are still taking a lot of time to get to a point where they're setting something up where they could go on the offensive. But like I said, it's John Krasinski kind of replaying the hits, and it works for that matter. It's suspenseful, and it's effective, and it's creepy. And, you know, I'd like to see more of what he does. I think he has a real knack for this, and I want to see him do something objectively different next time, because I wouldn't want his entire career to be defined as a series of Quiet Place movies, because he certainly has some promise, and I think he can do a lot more. So I'm going to have to say A Quiet Place Part 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Launchpad from Disney Plus. The Walt Disney Company offers an opportunity for young, underrepresented filmmakers to direct and exhibit short films.
Ooh. Do you want a bedtime story?
Ooh.
Okay, an imaginary one. I have a secret.
What's your secret?
We're very happy to have you here.
I'll sing the song for tomorrow.
For the first time, I didn't feel so alone.
It's a very vague description of it, and that's because there is no connection between any of these stories aside from the very, very loose theme of connections. And the purpose of this series is it's an anthology series, or six episodes right now. And in fact, if you're a filmmaker who's in an underrepresented group, season two, you can apply through the middle of June, something like June 11th. So if you go to Disney and search up the Disney Launchpad page, you can find a place to apply for this. And what it's meant for is, and we heard a lot about this, you hear about this every year in the Academy Awards, these are underrepresented filmmakers. And there's different people who are involved. There's one filmmaker's Chinese, one filmmaker, I think she might be Pakistani, and there's one that's a non-binary Asian American. And there are a bunch of different underrepresented parts. Disney doesn't restrict them on what they can do. I mean, obviously they can't do anything too extreme. And all these stories, while they have their own story, a lot of them are certainly directed at a social issue. Like, for example, one of them called American Eid is about these Pakistani girls at school. And the school and the kids and the teachers really don't know much about Eid, which is during Ramadan, and it's breaking the fast. And it's them trying to come to terms with that. The older daughter is embarrassed by it, and the younger daughter wants to share how great it is. And, you know, so it's an uplifting, open-minded look into that. Another one, that's done by the non-binary Asian American, it's about a little kid who's a boy who likes girly things. He takes ballet class. He likes pink, and he makes a friend at school, and the friend's father is worried because he's not acting like a quote unquote regular boy. And so these are like the issues are right in the forefront. But then there's other ones that it's sort of like in the background. There's one called Growing Fangs, and it's made by a Mexican American filmmaker, I think. And the characters are Mexican Americans, but they are monsters. They're like, she's like half vampire. Her dad's, I think, human. Her mom's a vampire. She goes to this monster school, basically, but it's just like, you know, vampires and werewolves and that sort of thing who are in the school. And it's just this weird little backdrop. And her family happens to be Mexican. And I think you could probably pull a little bit of a metaphorical symbolism with being an outsider, being somebody who's half human, half vampire is like saying, oh, you know, you're half European and you're half Mexican. And I can see where you can take some metaphorical notes from that. But overall, it's just a cute little high school story. And like I said, these are new filmmakers, so they're a little heavy-handed. But they do a good job, and I commend Disney for taking a chance to grow and expand. And this is giving a leg up for some of these folks to get a foot in the door, and I think that's great. So if you're curious to see these, you can. I think they're very Disney-friendly, so you can watch them with the family. So I'm going to have to say they kind of rock.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Fugitive and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Prince's Voyage. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. If you haven't been following some of the streaming news, if you remember last year, there was a company called Quibi, which stood for Quick Bites, and it was designed to have entertainment in like 6 to 10 minute chunks. It was designed for people who are going to like ride a bus, for example, or take a cab somewhere, or watch when you're by yourself for 10 minutes, you know, in a room sitting on something made of porcelain, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's, I think, how they designed this. And it failed spectacularly as a service. And there's multiple reasons why. Part of it is you can only access it on your phone. It wasn't integrated with social media. And also the fact that TikTok and YouTube kind of already had a corner on the quick bite market. But also they launched it right at the beginning of the pandemic, where people weren't riding the bus, but were instead staying at home wanting hours of programming to stream rather than minutes of programming to stream. But they had this massive assortment of shows. They had reality TV and comedy series and drama series and documentaries and a whole bunch of different things. I covered a couple of them last year. There was that one called Don't Dig Deeper, which was directed by Catherine Hardwick. I know I talked about Die Hard. I talked about The Most Dangerous Game. I talked about those when I had a Quibi membership. But I realized not a whole lot of people had that membership. Well, the Roku channel went and bought all that programming. They bought the rights to stream this stuff, and they rebranding it Roku Originals, and they dropped all of them. Actually, it was last week on streaming day, which I think was the 20th, but they're available. So if you got a Roku box, you can get the Roku channel. It's free, and you're going to have some embedded advertising, but at least it breaks it nicely because it just does it between every 5 to 10 minute break you have. And while I'm not interested in the reality or the documentary series or the lifestyle series, I decided to watch a couple of stuff from their full length, their features, which are basically they shoot a 90 minute to 100 minute movie and they break it up into like 10 or 14 chunks. So the one I want to cover right now is The Fugitive. A famous ex-con in LA is suspected of a terrorist bombing and he goes on the run to find the actual killer.
I want film from every camera within a 10-block radius, so we could be looking for anyone from anywhere.
Right there. That's Mike Farrow.
A subway was just bombed.
We're either the first to report it,
or we repeat the news that someone else finds.
Dad, why are the police after you?
I want to fix everything. I just need to figure out what's going on.
I've been set up.
Mike, what are you going to do?
I'm going after who did it.
Now, this stars Kiefer Sutherland, and it's put together by Nick Santora, who is a TV producer. He did stuff like Breakout Kings and Prison Break. And I think he also worked on The Most Dangerous Game, which I reviewed last year. It follows him being a fugitive, but it removes the original story of Dr. Richard Kimball and somebody kills his wife, and it's the man with the one arm he's going after. Because we, of course, saw that in the original TV series, and of course we saw that in the Harrison Ford movie from the 90s, the big screen version. This is just him being a fugitive, and it has Kiefer Sutherland sort of retreading his Jack Bauer character and working for a counter-terrorist unit in Los Angeles. Part of the problem with this movie is, and I saw this with like the other Quibi stuff, is it's very, very surface. There's not much depth to these because they don't have much time. They have like just like 8 minutes, if that, to tell a segment of the story, and then you got to go on to the next one. So there's not much time to get any sort of depth of character or depth of story because you kind of have to just burn through it so quickly. I mean, it's not even a half hour show. It's like 8 minutes. So if you just want that very surface level of an action film, you get that with The Fugitive. It wasn't terrible. I enjoyed it. But it is a little bit problematic. It's not the greatest television you're going to see. It doesn't quite work as a TV series. It doesn't quite work as a movie. And that's one of the problems with these Quibi contents. I think the comedy stuff works better because, I mean, comedy sure, certainly can be nuanced, but it's not uncommon to have short, big comedy. So I'm going to say that The Fugitive kind of rocks, but I'm going to go back and look at a bunch of stuff now that the Roku channel has it.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on The Prince's Voyage, which is available on Blu-ray right now from Shout Factory. It actually came out last week. In an alternative world where monkeys evolved into the dominant species, a lost warrior prince finds himself in a large city that is fighting against the forest trying to take back the land. Now, this movie's in French. It's an animated film, but it's in French, and the trailer's in French. So I don't have a trailer, because radio stations generally frown upon broadcasting unknown dialogue in a foreign language. You know, go figure. So instead, I'm going to play a trailer I do have, which is the Friends Reunion special on HBO Max right now.
The cast of Friends!
Wow! Does Courtney still have her lines written on the table?
We've literally just slipped right back.
We regret.
We have such a bond from this show.
Were Ross and Rachel on a break?
Yes.
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 Bullshit.
The first table read, that's the first time I laid eyes on any of you.
Everyone was so perfectly cast.
All right, first let's talk about The Prince's Voyage. I'll hit the Friends special in a second. But with The Prince's Voyage, it's a really interesting movie. I think it's based on an existing book that I've never read. But like I said in the description, it's they evolve from monkeys. They kind of have this monkey shape to their face, and they refer to each other as monkeys. But they've evolved into what humans are. And they're probably in the Victorian era of times, you know, cable cars, maybe a little bit later. And almost this like feudal prince had almost drowned when he was with a bunch of his warriors on horseback, and he washes up on the shore to this land that he's never been to. And they want to do some experiments on him, but he befriends a younger kid, and the kid tells him, you know, what this world is and, you know, where they came from. And he goes and starts to learn that they're fighting against the forest from kind of overtaking the cities again. And it's a real interesting look at and contemplation on society and who we are and our role in this world and our interaction with other groups, not species, but other groups, other races and other nationalities. It really is a beautifully done movie. It's gorgeously animated, and I had a lot of fun watching it. It is in French, and I don't know if the Blu-ray, I didn't get the Blu-ray, but the screener I had was in French, so I don't know if they have English dubbed content on the Blu-ray, but at least what I saw was in French, so you have to, you know, of course, read the subtitles. But it's a neat little animated movie. I'm a huge fan of out-of-the-box animation that's not just done for kids. This is something, a kid can watch this, sure, but it's got more to it than just your average cartoon. So I found this a really interesting movie, so I'm going to have to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Let's quickly just talk about that Friends special. I did end up watching that. The reason I watched it is because I had a host on one of my stations that I'm on where I do call-ins every week, and they're like, are you going to watch a Friends reunion? And I'm like, I guess I have to now, just in case somebody asks me about it. So I took the time. It's like an hour and 45 minutes. So it's basically a two-hour show, which is long. Ultimately, it's exactly what you'd expect from a reunion special. It's one of these things that would have been on, like, Oprah in the 90s before streaming. Or they would have done, like, the two-hour finale. Do you remember when they did like the Seinfeld finale? It was like an hour of retrospective and interviews, and then they had the one-hour finale. That's what it feels like, only it's 2 hours. You got James Corden interviewing the Friends, and I mean, it's very nicey-nicey. It's made absolutely for the fans, and there's some neat stuff in there. It's neat to see all six of them together in the same room. It's neat to see how, in some strange ways, the women held up better than the men, and you normally don't see that in humanity, let alone Hollywood. But I mean, it was nice to see them talk and interact. And I mean, some of the stories, it's a fluffy interview from James Corden. And you know, when is that not the case? I mean, cause that's what he does. That's what he's known for. You want to hear Barbara Walters style interview. You don't get James Corden to do it, but it overdoes some things. It certainly overplays Smelly Cat. But then again, the TV series overplayed Smelly Cat. And they had some interesting guest stars. Some of them were better than others. The ones that were the best were the ones who are people from the show. Like Janice shows up, and it's neat to hear her speak in a normal voice. I mean, it's really made for the fans. If you love the series, and you know, if you're not a cynical SOB like me and you love the series, you'll probably enjoy it. But for me, I just thought it was okay. I'd say it kind of rocks. And it's on HBO Max right now, so if you've got that, you can watch it for free.
It kind of rocks.
Other releases on DVD and Blu-ray this week include Chaos Walking, Explorers, the Collector's Edition, Supernatural Season 15, Super 8 in 4K, My Fair Lady in 4K, Psycho in 4K, and that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, and Spirit Untamed. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.